Debate season is underway. No major surprises, but major differences, to be sure, between the candidates last night. The worrying is underway among Virginia Republicans after a ballot measure passes there, likely swinging 4 congressional seats in the upcoming midterms. And nothing is really underway in terms of ending the war in Iran as President Trump extends the so-called ceasefire. Good morning, my friend. Great to be back in studio here in Fargo today on the Steve Hallstrom Show. I told someone I met out there yesterday in Watford City that I kind of have it good, no matter if I'm headed out west or headed back east. It's always good because there are people I care very much about in both places. And the lucky thing for me is I get to take all of you with me wherever it is that I go. So good to be back with you. Yes, I do care about you. You are someone I care about. I may not know you, but I've gotten to know a lot of you. And I like pretty much everybody, I can say with some certainty there. There have been a couple over the years, but hey, you know what? If we're 2 out of a million, that's pretty darn good. It is a joy to do this show every day, and it's taken me a little while to get used to doing the morning show because I used to do a show from 4 to 6, and I loved being able to kind of at the end of the day or at the end of the business day, it was anyway for me, just kind of do a cram session on all the things that have happened during the course of the day and tell you because so many of us kind of do it the same way. You maybe kind of check in on the news and what's going on in the morning. Then you get to work if you're working an 8 to 5 or something like that. And you kind of lose touch with the world because you're in the bunker all day. Then you get out and, okay, what's going on? Well, moving from 9 to 11 is a little different because, yeah, you got some overnight news. But generally speaking, you're giving early updates on the day. But I've grown to really enjoy this part of it, too. And setting the tone, and it's amazing how much actually does happen before 9 o'clock. So I guess I had it good before, and I've got it pretty good now. So great to be back with you here today on the program. I'm going to jump right to it here today, just because there is so much to get to today, and our key stories today have a few pieces to the puzzle. So want to make sure that we give plenty of time to do all of that. I could preview the show, but it would take a little while to do that. Just know I've got some stuff coming up today on the Virginia ballot measure. I want to explain to you clearly what happened and why, because I don't think I knew it before I really dug in this morning. And I want to talk about the debate we had last night and a poll that the forum has up on its website asking people who they plan on voting for. And I think some of those early results are very interesting. So there we go on that. So let's get to it today here with the Morning Wire. And these are kind of the main points that I would want to give you as we start the day. We call it a rapid fire rundown, semi-automatic storylines, starting with the weather almanac for today. And in Fargo, Moorhead, West Fargo, the average high temperature right now is 58. So like average high is about 60. We're going to be well above that, though. Dean says 88. Our record is 89. We might hit it today. Average low 35. Record low 19 back in 1988. The record high of 89 was set back in 1990, so not all that long ago. We will gain 3 minutes and 7 seconds of daylight today. The markets are flying upward this morning after the president decided to extend the ceasefire with Iran. The Dow is up about 1%. NASDAQ, same thing. So we're hundreds of points upward on both of them. WTI crude oil, though, interestingly enough, continues to rise. We're back above $90 a barrel, $91.64 right now. Gold up $53 an ounce. Silver up $1.82. And Bitcoin today up another $4,000. Bitcoin now knocking on the door of $79,000. So good time to have a little Bitcoin in your portfolio if you do. Average gas price today down another cent at $4.02. North Dakota average price $3.58. Minnesota $3.64. South Dakota $3.65. All right, so what's going on in the news cycle today? The war in Iran. President Trump says he is extending the ceasefire indefinitely, backing down from his latest threat to resume attacks if the regime did not accept terms for the ending of the war. I've heard some reports say 3 to 5 days, But I don't know that everybody feels like the president has given a clear deadline on that. Indefinitely is what I saw in most of the reports this morning. He says Iran is collapsing financially and will eventually give up. I hope he's right. It's not what the Iranians typically do. They think that Trump's buying time for a surprise military blow. Meanwhile, Iran's Navy says it seized two container ships in the Strait of Hormuz, citing, quote, maritime violations. Oh, yeah, you got to love the Iranians. The UK says two of their ships have been attacked in the Strait. Five candidates vying to become Fargo's first full-time mayor squared off last night at the Fargo Theater. Sekou Sirleaf, Josh Boucher, Denise Kolbeck, Michelle Turnberg, and Dave Pepcorn. The candidates clashed around homelessness. Pepcorn argued the city devotes too many resources. Kolbeck says the city hasn't done enough. This is a key difference here. Turnberg stressed the city is not a nonprofit. Sirleaf pushed back on what he called the stigmatization of homelessness, a point that Turnberg disputed, according to Valley News Live. Pepcorn says Mayor Mahoney, who is retiring, has been soft on, well, terming out, I guess, has been soft on crime, called for a new approach. Boucher and Kolbeck both argued that crime is down throughout the city, but they said perception is reality when it comes to public safety. Candidates also clashed over the Downtown Engagement Center. Turnberg and Pepcorn expressed skepticism over the funding and services tied to the facility, while the other three voiced support for keeping services available. So some key differences there. You've got two on one side and three on the other. There's no question about it. The Fargo Convention Center is getting more interesting by the day. Two financial experts and a consultant laid out the challenges with all four proposals under consideration, even describing one of them as scary. The Fargo's this is the Forum's report today. Fargo Convention Center Committee met yesterday, reviewing financial assessments and consultant opinions. City Finance Director Susan Thompson says none of these locations are financially viable as presented. Well, there's a vote of confidence, right? One consultant says there's a clear front runner, the Civic Center downtown. Brujala is the second and Shields Arena third in his choice. So a lot. We're going to have to dig into this story. There's a lot left to go on this one. North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer signaled a hard yes yesterday for Federal Reserve nominee Kevin Warsh during confirmation questioning yesterday in the Senate. Warsh is President Trump's pick to lead the Fed when Jay Powell's term ends in May. During the exchange, Cramer questioned the Fed's history of unanimous decision-making. Warsh argued that a chairman must be willing to change their views as economic facts evolve. More than 50 days into the U.S. and Israel's war with Iran, the Forum reports that the full impact on North Dakota oil production is still too early to know. The North Dakota Department of Mineral Resources held its monthly director's cut media briefing yesterday in Bismarck. They say because the most recent data presented covers the month of February, it was before the war began, they cannot say with a lot of certainty exactly what the impact has been or will be on North Dakota there. The state is third behind Texas and New Mexico in oil production. President Trump has nominated a University of Minnesota economist to be the next chairman of the White House Council of Economic Advisors. Christopher Phelan is his name. It's a key position for analyzing the economy and administration policies. If confirmed by the Senate, Phelan would succeed Stephen Miron, a Harvard-trained economist who has joined the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors. Phelan's resume suggests a keen interest in the operations of central banks, which is a major interest of President Trump. And a 24-year-old Longville, Minnesota man is in the hospital with life-threatening injuries after hitting a deer and crashing into a ditch just north of Bemidji. It happened just after midnight when his Toyota sedan hit a deer at high speed, according to the State Patrol. He was not wearing a seatbelt, and alcohol is suspected. I can confirm this story. The deer are all over in northern Minnesota. And at night, good luck. I was swerving around them like cones at a driver's test the other day when I was headed out to Grand Rapids at night. So, yeah, you don't want to be tipsy out on the road in northern Minnesota where you got the rocks and the cows and the trees and the deer, because they are all over, the little ones. Apparently it was a good summer or a good winter for breeding deer, and they all made it because there's a million of them out there. All right, when we come back, story of the day. Virginia voters have approved a new congressional map that could help Democrats gain as many as 4 new House seats. This is a big story heading into the midterm elections. I'll give you the rundown next. 701-271-1100 is our phone number. You can call me or text me at that number. The phone line is brought to you by Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness. They've recently expanded and can get you in fast. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment, get in this week at valleychristian.co. And I'm coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. Want to know where all those spiffy Lincolns are coming from? Driving around the metro? Mm-hmm. Coming from Wahpeton, Vision Ford Lincoln. They do it well down there, no doubt about that. Okay, story of the day. Virginia voters yesterday approved a new congressional map. It will give the Democrats an advantage in 10 House districts, leaving just one safe Republican seat. Currently, it's a 6-5 split, Democrats and Republicans. Now it'll be 10-1, most likely. Although, I guess you never know. We've got some time between now and November. But this could mean, I mean, you can do the math as well as I, 10-1 versus 6-5. That could be 4 House seats. And if you did that right now, I think you'd basically be an even split. It's a major blow for Republicans, no question about that. So how did this happen? How did we get here? Why did something like this go to a vote of the people? I want to walk through this with you because it's the story of the day to me. And I'm going to give you this without editorial comment. I will have no snide comments for you. I will not have any snark factor here at all. I'm just going to give it to you objectively. We report, you decide, okay? And then you can decide if you think the right thing happened here. Because I always wonder, okay, the people went out and voted. If that's what the people want, then maybe nothing sinister happened here. So I'm just going to give it to you, and then you can decide. Final results are in. Funny how they can get this done, right? Here, look, oh my gosh, I said I was not going to give any snarky comments, and it took me like 4 seconds. 100% of the precincts are now reporting in Virginia. Funny when something works out for the Democrats that they can get the votes done in 10 minutes. And then when it's like, Donald Trump's going to win, we're going to need till 3 a.m. and whatever. And then it might be 10 more days after that. Okay, so yes went 51.4% of the vote, no 48.5%. 89,000 votes were split. 3 million Virginians cast ballots. That's a massive turnout for a special election. So what happens now? Well, House Bill 29, the map already signed by Governor Spanberger in February, immediately becomes the law of the state. Okay? The vote is final, but the Supreme Court of Virginia is still expected to hear some legal challenges regarding what some call misleading ballot language and the constitutionality of mid-decade redistricting. But this was, no question, a major turning point in Virginia politics here. So how did this come about? In 2020, Virginia voters approved a redistricting commission, bipartisan, 8 citizens, 8 legislators, to take the power away from politicians and prevent gerrymandering, which is this process of trying to have politicians decide which party should be in control. I mean, who would argue for the other guy, right? But Democratic leaders in the General Assembly argued because other states controlled by Republicans were redrawing their maps mid-decade to gain an advantage, Virginia was being effectively disarmed in the fight for control of the U.S. House. So to counter this, they proposed a constitutional amendment that was put before voters yesterday. The amendment creates a temporary exception to the commission process because of this disarming that we're going with here. So the logic looks like this. The amendment stated that if any other state in the U.S. redrew their maps mid-decade for reasons other than a court order, the Virginia General Assembly would regain the power to redraw Virginia's maps. Proponents argued this was about, quote, restoring fairness. They claimed if one side does this kind of thing, the other side has to have power to maintain a national balance of power. And with the yes vote finalized yesterday, the power was taken away from this bipartisan commission and given back to the General Assembly, the legislature, which is, wait for it, controlled by Democrats. That was a little snarky, wasn't it? All right, sorry about that. Let me do that again. The General Assembly is controlled by Democrats. Okay. Why are we going to get a slanted map? Well, it's already been redrawn. The governor signed the legislation that only waited for yesterday's referendum to become the law. And under the commission's map, Virginia's 11 congressional seats have been redrawn now to go from 6 Democrat likely to 10 Democrat likely. And to get voters to agree to this, the legislature added a sunset clause, and the bipartisan commission is not dead, it's just on ice. The legislature's power to redraw maps expires October 21st of 2030. Okay, so you got the 26, 28, and 2030 elections that are impacted, even though the law says it's quote-unquote temporary. So for the foreseeable future, you're going to have this skewing. Now, if you can make it till 2030, you might shift it back the other way. But the controversy over the wording of yesterday's measure was so intense, it actually went to the Virginia Supreme Court before the polls ever opened. The central issue was the ballot didn't ask a technical question. Critics say it used loaded language designed to push voters toward a yes vote. So here's what the question read. Should the Constitution of Virginia be amended to allow the General Assembly to temporarily adopt new congressional districts to restore fairness in the upcoming elections? Opponents filed lawsuits saying fairness is a subjective political term, not a neutral explanation. And they said basically what you're doing here is unfair, redrawing this map. Supporters said it's accurate because North Carolina and Texas had already redrawn their maps, and they say fairness refer to the national balance of power, not just the local lines. The legal challenge also pointed out the ballot question left out the catch. And the catch is the legislature could only do this if another state redrew their maps first. And critics said by leaving that out, the ballot made it sound like a simple proactive choice rather than reactive high stakes in a national arms race. Voters were not explicitly told on the ballot that this power grab was contingent on what was happening in other states. It just said, restore fairness. The wording emphasized that there was a temporary change that would resume the standard process after 2030. But civil rights groups and some Republicans argue this was a Trojan horse. And they pointed out that while the law says it's temporary, once a 10-to-1 map is established, it's much harder to undo what's been done in 2031, and they felt the word temporary downplayed the permanent impact on 3 consecutive election cycles. All right. Was there any out-of-state money that came in on this? Was there ever? Lots of it. About $100 million in spending, the vast majority came from out-of-state dark money groups. And you can understand why, right? It could flip the U.S. House of Representatives. So on the yes side, you had about $65 million that came in, people that wanted to change this from mostly Democrat-leaning groups, and the opposition raised about $30 million, so a little more than 2-to-1 on this, because Virginia is a domino, no question about that. So that's probably as big a question to me on this whole thing, is when you have something about a state and the money's coming in from out of state, with, you know, 501c4s where you don't know who's signing the checks. You don't know who's signing the checks. And why is there so much interest? It's like this free school lunch thing in North Dakota. Why is there so much out-of-state interest in how we're feeding our kids here? Very interesting to me. That is story of the day. More on this coming up next. All right. So what do we make of what happened in Virginia? I gave you story of the day. I gave you the facts. I gave you as objectively as I could. I think I did pretty good. I showed a fair amount of restraint there about a couple of things that you could tell get me going. I want to be more offended and more outraged on this than I am. What brings me to say that is the people of Virginia showed up to vote. Now, you can say, well, we know voting is crooked. Maybe it is. Maybe there's cheating going on in the vote. I don't know any of that. But assuming, which is dangerous to do in this kind of thing, that the votes were counted fairly, I have to say at the end of the day that you have Virginia residents going to the polls to vote for something. And if this is what they want, then this is what they should get, unless we can prove that there was something nefarious going on here. I would say the two things that jump out to me as being maybe not nefarious, but certainly shady to me are the wording of this. And it went to, state Supreme Court. First of all, where's the Secretary of State here? I've got to think Michael Howe would not have allowed this to get on the ballot to say that, you know, when they say we've got to put fairness in this thing. That is a bias in the question right there. When you say, well, you know, we want to adopt new congressional districts to restore fairness. I mean, who's not going to vote for fairness? This is what happens when they sign the petitions. You know, do you want children to starve, which is what we're getting in North Dakota now with the school lunch thing. Do you want to restore fairness? Oh, yeah, I want to restore fairness. Who would not want to restore fairness? My gosh, who would go against that? Well, my gosh, that's a terrible question. They're not explaining at all why or what will trigger it. So that is an issue to me. And then the fact that we had 95% of the money come in from out-of-state groups. Really? And I feel the same about the money that came in on the no side than the yes side in this case. We've got out-of-state money coming in to lobby Virginians to vote a certain way. So there's a lot of things I don't like about this one. But at the end of the day, I say, God, if this is what the people want, we have to allow people to have an opinion and vote. Now, the ballot measure thing, two things can be true at the same time. I'm not saying I love it. I'm not saying that no wrong was done here, but I'm just saying at the end of the day, the people of Virginia did vote on this thing. And I'm battling those are two, like they say, you got like one dog on each shoulder, right? The good dog and the bad dog. I just, the dogs are battling it out in my mind. And my mind does not work like many people's does, which is good for you, I suppose. But I it's hard for me to many times come down and say, here is where I stand on this, and I'm going to go both barrels on something, because in my mind and in the way I see the world, life is not ever all one way or the other. Two things are true most of the time. In the end, I don't like how this came about, and I don't like how it was worded. But it did give Virginians the opportunity to be adults and read into this thing and decide what they wanted for their state. And it looks like both sides came out on this. I mean, 3 million is a pretty good turnout in that state for something that's a special election here. And it was very close in the end. So you'd like the representatives of the state to look at all this and say, okay, well, if we've got something here where, you know, it's that close, you know, maybe we don't go 10 to 1 as we redraw this map. But, of course, the map is already redrawn. I'm guessing you may have a different opinion on this than I do. I'm just telling you where I stand, then you can kind of come up with where you stand. I feel like we need to still allow people to make their own decisions. And we get the government we deserve as a state. Not you and me individually, but if this is what Virginians wanted and we can rule out fraud and dishonesty in the elections, which I get it, but if you can't prove it, you don't have. So you got to go with, we have to go with this election was done by people who were informed and showed up and this is what they wanted. And maybe we needed more people to show up on the no side for sure on this. I don't like any part of this. And the other thing I say at times like this is why we pray. And God is still on the throne. And God is a God of justice. I've been reading out of Romans a lot lately, and it talks about God is a God who sees through the deceit of evil men. And I believe that's why President Trump got elected, is that the good Lord said, look, what you're being told here, where this country is going, this is not right. It's not fair. It's not anything that is transparent. So many things in government not transparent, and the Lord decided that we were going to have Donald Trump. And so, yes, it looks bad for the midterms. It does, God's still on the throne. He appoints the rulers, it says in Scripture. I'm going to go with that, even though it's not easy. So a couple finishing thoughts on that one here today. All right. I wanted to also talk to you today about what happened yesterday on Capitol Hill. And U.S. Senator Kevin Cramer had a chance to question Kevin Warsh, who's the new Fed chair. And I get this story isn't as sexy as you voting on the midterm elections or whatever, but the appointment of Kevin Warsh to Fed chair is massive because two things. Number one, he is a guy that looks at interest rates differently than the glacier iceberg moving Fed boards for the last 50 years. And the thought among Jerome Powell and most of the people on the Fed board has been that if you raise rates or lower, if you lower rates, you're going to drive inflation through the roof. And the economy we have today is very different than the economy we had 25, 50, 7,500 years ago. And there are things you can do outside of interest rates that can change how inflation works. If you're good at managing private sector enterprise, it's not necessarily a guarantee that an interest rate eighth of a point drop is going to lead to whatever, inflation of 5% or whatever they look at. And I think Warsh is willing to say, let's look at where we're at. Let's look at the different pieces to this puzzle and figure out how we get to the right place on that. And I want to play for you the 5 minutes of Kevin Cramer's questioning of Kevin Warsh yesterday, because I think it tells you a little something about the senator and a little something about Kevin Warsh as well. This is how this sounded yesterday. Well, we won't be able to get all of this, but I think most will be able to get it here.
Chairman, thank you, Mr. Warsh, for being here. Thanks for stepping in the gap.
Thank you.
In fact, I'm a little bit curious as to why you even wanted to do this. I'm thinking, I don't know. Anyway, congratulations on the choice. By the way, with regard to independence, real quickly, I find it curious. In fact, I've often found that curious that people expect somebody who is appointed by an elected official has to be confirmed by 100 other elected officials would somehow not have a philosophy. That's what I hear sometimes. Like, why don't we, speaking of AI, we should just have an AI Fed chairman. That way it'd be completely neutral, right? Other than the people that put all the information in the algorithms. Anyway, that said, I think we should not forget that it would be common for a president who believes that interest rates should be lower to want to nominate somebody who has expressed that maybe interest rates could be a little lower, as opposed to the quid pro quo that's being accused of today. So I'm just grateful you're willing to do it. By the way, the other thing about independence that strikes me with regard to the Fed, do you have any idea how often an interest rate decision by the Fed is a 12-0 or a 10-0 vote? Do you have a sense of it?
I do, Senator. I'd say over the last 15 years, decisions have been unanimous or near unanimous. As I said to one of your colleagues earlier, I prefer clean memos and messier meetings, and there's nothing wrong with a divergence of opinion. These are very hard calls.
Thank you. I don't know when diversity became a bad thing in a room of thinkers, particularly with staggered terms. The other thing, none of this was in my mind that long ago, but the other thing that strikes me is, you do have a lot of experience. This is your 20th anniversary, or at least your second anniversary. Have your thoughts changed much or evolved over those 20 years of experience in various categories, areas, not to mention your research and your intellectual and academic writings? I mean, have you evolved a little bit?
Absolutely. I'll make 3 points if I can. One is, it is essential for the chair of this organization to be open-minded to new ideas. Mm. The world is moving fast. The mistake that's common in the economics profession, which Secretary Schultz once described to me when I was telling him that I was thinking about pursuing further studies, he said, it's fine to get a PhD, but make sure that's not the last day you were learning. Mm. Too many people in the profession go back to what they learned 30 or 40 years ago. We've got to be open-minded. The world's changing and the facts are changing. To the characterization I heard from some of your colleagues about did my opinions change, my opinions change when the facts change. When interest rates are at zero and the balance sheet is growing and the economy is booming, well, relative to that, I will say I sounded hawkish. In 2018, when the Federal Reserve pushed to raise rates into a financial market meltdown and economic weakening, I said that was a mistake. That was dovish. I expect to have a divergence of views based on the facts on the ground. And if I could just answer one other question you asked about why I want to do this job, I would say I've lived the American dream. I've been the luckiest, most blessed, fortunate person with the greatest teachers. I was a kid from upstate New York in public schools, and I had an opportunity to serve after 9/11. I was walking with a friend of mine who happens to be in this room away from a building near the site of the tragedy. I was walking up Fifth Avenue, and I thought to myself, what am I doing? And so I committed myself to public service then. I did 10 and a half years of public service. I've been grateful for 15 years in the private sector where I've been able to practice my discipline, think anew about things. And the call to service struck again. I'm honored to serve if this body will confirm me.
Good stuff there. Got about another minute left. I'll play this on the other side because he's got a really good point coming up here. I think you have to be willing to say, does our world work the same as it did, and do we need to make some changes because of that? I like what I heard yesterday. More from him coming up next. It's that time of year. You're thinking about buying or selling your home. Well, you got to call our friend Dan over at James Patrick Real Estate before you sign any contracts. Dan's team's been doing this for a long time. They've closed a ton of listings, and he charges less than most other agents. His clients love the system they've built, and you will too. Go to jamespatrickrealestate.com to learn more. Trust me, it'll be worth your time. That's jamespatrickrealestate.com. From the email box today, Steve, the thing that's so frustrating about Virginia is that 51% of voters are now taking away 100% of the rights of 49% of the voters. That's so good. You're 100% right. And it just speaks to, should you have everything go one way? And I get it. This sometimes will benefit Republicans too. And I probably don't complain as much about that. But in this case, when it just seems like it's so fabricated how we got here, I get it. You're 100% right on that one. Grant wants to talk about school lunches. Hang on one second, Grant. I just want to finish up the last minute or so from Kevin Warsh, Capitol Hill yesterday, as Senator Cramer was interviewing him. There's some really good stuff in this last minute here.
Excellent. You know, I do find it curious that so many people seem to be hung up on the fact that you've been successful even while doing in between bouts of public service, probably a better way to put it. I'm not wealthy, never have been wealthy, and I'm not sure I have much potential to be wealthy, but I have nothing against people who are. That said, real quickly, I do want to talk a little bit about debanking. That hasn't been talked about a whole lot, but speaking of institutions that are dug in, I think there's a you know, with out of the 22,000 people, there are a lot of them that sort of still believe that reputational risk should be a factor, that reputational risk could be based on out of favor, you know, industries. Can you give me a sense of how you plan to attack that, if you will?
Politics have no place, not just in monetary policy, but in supervision and regulation.
Yes.
If central bankers should stand for anything, it's to resist fads, resist trends, call balls and strikes. That's exactly what I would intend to do.
I lean hard yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, well said, right? And time will tell. He's going to be the guy, and he'll be criticized if he doesn't, if he's political in his opinions. He has not always been lockstep with Trump. And there were other yes men that would have been more loyal to the shield, if you will, than war. So I'm encouraged. The guy has done well for himself in life, and I love the way he is talking about we've got to look at new information. And this is my biggest claim. I could be the only one feeling this way because I don't hear this a lot from anybody in these economic conversations, but it seems to me that when you are going to run your economy the way Powell has done it, that if you lower rates an eighth of a percent, a quarter percent, whatever, you're automatically going to increase prices. I think that's taking a 1976 playbook and using it today, here 50 years later. Because back in 76, if you lowered rates, it just really meant more people were going to chase the same amount of goods. And then you're going to have the inflation. But if you lower rates today, you have different things that happen. The tech sector can build out the AI tools, the automation, the efficiency things. And energy efficiency is another part of this that will make all of those goods cheaper to produce. A quarter percent cut is not now a guarantee you're going to get inflation. It will help you with efficiency and productivity that I think is going to kill inflation or at least knock it down a little bit. So I think Warsh gets that. And I don't hear many people saying this. I hear a lot of people saying, oh, we just don't think it's going to necessarily translate. But I don't often hear a lot of kind of rational discussion on that. I would like to. And I'll look for some of that and play a little bit of that when I can find it. All right, Grant is on the phone here on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. He wants to jump in on the conversation that Jay Thomas and I were having about school lunches yesterday. Hey, Grant, what's going on?
Hey, Steve. I'm sure you saw that news article where North Dakota is spending $2 billion a year on poll tabs and, you know, guilty as charged once in a while.
Hmm.
But don't you think that because the state always loves their money, I mean, never get between the government and their money, right? You got $2 billion that North Dakotans are spending on it. You could easily take a certain percentage and fund school lunches this way. And you'd probably never have a problem with funding it.
Hmm. So just go the poll tab route, find other ways to do it.
I mean, it's another avenue. I think that with the volatility and you're going to fight wars overseas, Harold Hamm better, you know, eat some crow pie, and he's drilling wells. Don't let that little PR stunt this last winter fool anybody. He's going to be drilling wells. We're going to still be making money. This happened under Burgum the first term where we had to adjust budgets, and then everything gets right back the way it was. You know, it's better if there's war for apparently everybody except the ones getting killed. But yeah, I just that's how I see it with poll tabs. I mean, I don't like it. It kind of feels dirty that we are spending this much. Yeah. But hey, if it's going to be, if this is what's going to be, you might as well just start charging, taxing something.
Yeah, Grant, I can't argue with anything you're saying there. I had not ever thought about that, using like charitable gambling as a way to do it, and just you're putting a user tax basically on anything and everything. And if it's a choice like that, I guess I understand where you're coming from. So thanks for getting us thinking today, Grant. Appreciate that. All right, that opens up a phone line for you, 701-271-1100. When we come back, the forum is running a poll on who you're going to vote for Fargo mayor. They got about 375 votes already. I'll tell you what that looks like in the key three coming up next. Steve Holsham Show coming to you live from Fargo, North Dakota today. Great to be here with you in the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. That is a great place to find your next car, truck, or SUV. Great people, great service, great programs, great vehicles, what's not to like, and great job opportunities available for you as well in sales and service. And you can get a hold of them. Go to drivewithvision.com. That's the best way to find out what's going on down there. See what they got on the lot. Check out their hiring options as well. And you will be able to walk away with a great experience, maybe a great vehicle, maybe a great job as well. Okay, I want to do a whole bunch of things here in a very short amount of time. Let's do this. Let's do the key three right now. And then I want to hit on a couple of text messages that I've gotten here that are very interesting. And we're having some good conversations today at 271-1100. That's the phone number, the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line, and it is also the text line. So use either, use that same number for either way you want to do it, okay? Story number one, Fargo mayor debate last night. My sources tell me I was not there. I was driving and forgot actually that it was going on last night, or I'd have probably tried to listen to it. But I talked to a couple people that did listen / take it in, and the comment that I got from them mirrors what I'm seeing in the Valley News Live summary, which I thought was done really well today on the VNL website, valleynewslive.com, that you really, it is what we thought it was. They are who we thought they were, to quote Denny Green. Remember that old Vikings coach? You have two conservatives and you have three liberals. And I know that Commissioner Kolpak, Deputy Mayor Kolpak, does not want to be called a liberal. But everything about her voting record says that she is, so I'm just going to go that route. Now, she may not like it. I don't know. But that's what I see in her. Josh Beauchesne is a liberal. Sekou Sirleaf is a liberal as well. And then you have Michelle Turnberg and Dave Pepcorn. I wish they both weren't running. I wish that there could be one of those two. And I don't know that I would say I'm secretly hoping that one of them drops out, but it would give conservative people in Fargo some greater hope that that one of the two. I think either one would do a fine job. I think Michelle probably works with other people better than Dave does, but I think Dave is spot on just about every issue. Michelle is fantastic on all the issues. I can think of two, three times maybe where I've looked at a vote that she's made. I think this is true of Dave and Michelle both. And I've said, what? And then I find out later that I kind of get where they're coming from. But when they talked about homelessness, here's a, just reading right out of the Valley News Live article, Pepcorn argued the city devotes too many resources to the issue, while Kolpak says the city hasn't done enough. If you think that the city has not done enough for homeless people in Fargo, I guess I would like to see the data points that you're pointing to there. When it comes to spending, they both talked about the spending issue, that we've got to be much more hawkish in how we spend money, and that seemed to be a difference. They talked about the Downtown Engagement Center, and Pepcorn and Turnberg said the funding, the services, they questioned everything, while Beauchesne, Kolpak, and Sirleaf voiced support for keeping the services available. There is a clear line of demarcation here with the two on one side and three on the other. And that, to me, is why it has to make the key three today. Story number two. Do we have a ceasefire? I guess we do in the in Iran proper. I guess there's no bombing going on. There's no anti-aircraft fire going on. But in the Strait of Hormuz, we've definitely got war going on. We've got a blockade of Iran's ports. And we've got ships going through the Strait of Hormuz being confiscated, attacked, shot at. Two container ships being actually taken by Iran that were going through the Strait. So this thing started as an Iran thing, but now it's a Strait thing more than anything else. So to me, it's a distinction without a difference. Yeah, we're not fighting there, but we're still fighting. Iran is fighting freedom. The United States, Israel, allied nations are fighting Iran. And I know the president, if you saw my commentary, my column on Flag Plus, you know how I feel about this. I know the president sees optimism. He's hopeful. He wants their, he believes that they will get to a good place on this. And they might. It just isn't going to be today or next week. It might be next month, but this to me feels like we've still got several more weeks left at minimum. And I don't know. The stock market loves it today, this ceasefire. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me why you would feel like we have a different stock market or a different economy than we did before, because we don't. So we'll just keep watching this one. So there you go. That's story number two. Story number three, the Fargo Convention Center Committee met yesterday to review some assessments by consultants and financial analysts on these four locations. And some pretty major takeaways came out of that. Good job by Robin Huebner in the forum, who wrote a really good summary of this. City Finance Director Susan Thompson basically put up her hand and said, hang on, just so you know, none of these operations are financially viable as presented. Gulp. Like, that's a drop the mic moment there. None of them are financially viable. And Dave Pepcorn, who is on that board, has said, we are not going to sign on to a city subsidy for these things. And good for him, we can't. So other consultant people said there's not a clear winner or a clear loser. Madeline Garza Baker Tilly, she says each has strengths and weaknesses. And her colleague David Earnhardt from Baker Tilly was asked if there's any red flags. He says, well, there's not a clear winner, so I don't think we can find a clear loser either. So here's what we have established. We don't have any that are a standout option because they all have concerns, and none of them are financially viable. The Fargo Convention Center Committee cannot approve any of them, as I see it. I mean, what else? What other conclusion can you draw? They've got to say, we're not doing this unless you come up with a different way to do this, because as it stands right now, this isn't going to work. One of the consultants ranked the four. Downtown first at 82 points. Brewhalicide second at 70. Shields Arena third at 65. Fargo Dome in dead last at 45 points. It is half as good as an option, basically, according to Thomas Hazinski from HVS. Half as good an option as downtown. And I guess I thought downtown was going to be the worst. Maybe I'm just thinking parking concerns and everything else. So very interesting here. The Fargo Dome's got a $12 million budget gap. That's no bueno. So those are what I believe to be the three most consequential stories in the news cycle today. All right, let me try to get to, I got time to do this. I get a text message, and I knew I was going to hear a little bit from our Democrat listeners. It said, Steve, okay, you don't like what happened in Virginia. Well, tell me what happened in North Carolina and Texas, where they recently did all of this. Okay, so I'll try to boil this down as quickly as I can. Yes, North Carolina and Texas, they did redistricting as part of their typical legislative process year over year. After the 2024 election, they take a look and see what the voters said in that election, and they redraw the maps to better balance that. That, to me, is a formula that has some consistency, and they do it every, I guess, 4 years to ensure that the state continues to reflect where the state's collective mindset is at. They had a process to do this in Virginia already with this bipartisan established committee of oversight. But the Democrats there saw the midterms were coming up, and we need to fight for every vote we can no matter how we do it, so they changed the process. In North Carolina and Texas, they stayed with a process that wasn't changed in reaction to current events. And in North Carolina and Texas, they ensure that what you see after is the same as what you had before. And the districts now represent a better showing of the percentage of red versus blue. That's how I see it. You may see it differently, but to me it looks like we just stuck our finger up in the wind and tried to change some things. Best thing I heard all day next. Vision Ford Lincoln and Wahpeton is hiring in their sales team. That could mean the job of a lifetime for you. How much money do you want to make just by helping your friends find the car, truck, or SUV they've been looking for? And service techs at Vision Ford Lincoln make more than anywhere else in the 5-state area. No weekends, full benefits. Vision Ford Lincoln, not just the place to buy a great set of wheels, it's the place to put your service career in overdrive. Go to drivewithvision.com. The forum has put up a poll this morning. Who is your preferred candidate coming out of Fargo's mayoral election on Tuesday after the debate, I think they're talking about there? And here are the current numbers on this. Leading the way, Josh Boucher, the current state representative? I don't think he's a senator. I believe he's a state representative. Anyway, he's in the legislature in Bismarck. He's a Democrat, and he is the leader right now in the forum polling at 33%. Second is Michelle Turnberg at 20. In third, Dave Pepcorn at 13. In fourth, Denise Kolpak at 12. Sekou Sirleaf brings up the rear at 2. not a factor in this. We get that. Him being out, I don't know, will lead anybody to have any big changes. And then 20% say not sure. And I applaud the forum for putting that in there because a lot of people still aren't sure. So that's good. So if that 20% breaks one way or another, you know, that could matter. The surprise for me in that, well, two of them, and it's the liberals here in this one. It's Josh Boshay and Denise Kopach. I thought Denise would poll higher, and I didn't realize Boshay would be a one out of three choice. Now, the forum tends to, as a content source, lean liberal. There are some hardcore conservatives I know that will never spend any time on the forum website. So maybe those numbers skew a little bit, but let's say you got 3%. So Boshay goes down to 30, Denise goes down to 9, maybe Turnberg and Pepcorn get a couple more. I mean, it still looks really good for Josh Boshay, and I would not have thought that. State-wise, yes, but has Josh been super active locally? Well, in his district, certainly. So I don't know. Interesting. Now, there can be some manipulation here, right? I mean, the Boshay camp says to all their people, hey, there's a poll going on in forum. Let's you know, pump the voting, and that could be. So very interesting. I don't know how I feel about this race. I think Denise Kopach's a bigger factor than how she polls here. I think the Boshay number skews a little higher than I think the reality is. I think Turnberg probably goes a little higher too. Pepcorn, I don't know. I mean, I like where Dave's out on the issues, but Dave has rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, communication style and whatever, over time. So I don't know. I think it's going to be a fascinating campaign. I really do. All right, 23 past the hour here. I want to play for you what I call the best thing I heard all day. And we've talked a lot on this program. I probably talk about it more than most conservative commentators do because, to me, what we are doing to our children with the transgender sex changes, hormone therapy, chemical castration, actual physical castrations, all of these, you know, the packing clothes and the suppressing clothes and all that, it's just absolutely awful. And I saw a clip on the on X that I saw yesterday, and I thought it was the best thing I heard all day yesterday. And this is a response to the current political climate where we have basically an entire political party that is just fine with all the things I just talked about before. And one of my frustrations is that we are over-sexualizing life to these children. And even if you're 15, 16, you're still a child. You're still not capable of fully processing the impact of your actions. And this is my biggest question mark to anybody who espouses these sex changes is, how can we be sure that these kids understand what you're doing to them? Well, you can't be. Because of that, you just can't do any of it. And I've said before, and I've gotten in trouble with some of you on the right on this, that if you want to go ahead and do this when you're 21, fine, but not when you're 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20 even. 21, that's the age in this country where you say, okay, go get it, whatever you want to do. So this is a pastor named Lauren Livingston of Central Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, and he makes a point better than I've ever done it about kids don't want to think about this stuff. They just want to live and they just want to go out and be kids, but we're making them deal with this way too early.
Children don't come into this world confused. They come in wanting candy and toys. They want to play. They want to have fun. They want to be hugged and held. They want to run and scream and have a good time. But they don't come in wondering about their privates or about their inclinations or sexual instincts. No. It's unstable, perverted adults that are indoctrinating young children, that are confusing the least of these by planting suggestions in their mind, showing them pictures, and asking them to experiment, at least experiment. I think it is mental child abuse. I think it is psychological brainwashing. I think it ought to be a crime. I think parents ought to rise up. But we've been beaten down, you see, and it's also been held back from us. And the government is silent about it and crooked about it. And they're teaching our children things we don't want them to know. And they're exposing them too early. And they're convincing them of something that isn't even the truth. To me, that is a crime against humanity. And if you are a school teacher who is doing this, you, in my opinion, are a criminal. And if you are a school principal who's promoting this, you are a criminal. And if you're the school board who's pushing this, you're all criminals. You're aiding and abetting perversion, and you're ruining children and our society.
I want to go to that guy's church. I find myself shaking my head, nodding my head, pumping my fist. Absolutely right. Think that's really wise. And if you're a pastor, should you not be delivering some kind of this message everyone at least once to your congregation? You're not picking political candidates here. You're standing for the Word of God and God's plan and His unique design for sexuality for kids. Kids don't want to deal with this stuff. Straight, gay, whatever. That's something to be decided by parents in time. Got some great lunch specials today at PetroServe USA. This is a time of the show when we all get hungry together. In Valley City, meatloaf today, Harwood Swedish meatballs, West Main Avenue, Swedish meatballs or chicken pot pie, 12th Avenue, chili burgers. Oh, I haven't heard that one before. That sounds good. 205 NP Avenue, Rangoon Seafood, the 45th Street store, teriyaki chicken, in Castleton, Chip Beef, pulled pork sandwiches in Glendon today, meatloaf in abundant supply at Wapana today, and Sloppy Joe's at the Cheyenne store, PetroServe USA, helping America fuel better. We are pleased to be joined on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line today by someone we've not had a chance to meet before, but we're going to fix that today. Manelli Derekshani is a senior science advisor for the CO2 Coalition. And we appreciate Manelli's time here on the program today. Manelli, thank you for being here today. I saw a report a couple of days ago, and I said, we've got to talk about this. The 2026 Global Energy Outlook finally put a number on the table for the goal of net zero in 2050. And the estimated cost, $275 trillion. That's about three times the entire global GDP. And the impact of all that, if we do spend every penny of that, the projected reduction in global temperature by 2100 is measured in fractions of a degree. So I saw Scott Bessent made headlines at the World Economic Forum not long ago talking about this. And this is one of those subjects that I think we need to talk about every so often. And so I appreciate your time today. When you've seen some of these things come up in the public sphere recently, what goes through your mind about this climate change debate?
Well, first, thank you for having me on your show. I would say the first thought that I have is that this is an enormous scientific and political scam, and that
thank you.
There is no reason to be concerned whatsoever with modest global warming or carbon dioxide emissions from the burning of fossil fuels. And I might add that $275 trillion figure is almost certainly a gross underestimate of what would be the true cost of a net zero transition. I would say that multiply that figure by at least three, and that gets closer to what the true financial cost would be globally to global GDP. But in either case, it would be bankrupting, and far more people would suffer and die as a result of the economic collapses that would be that would occur globally than will be killed by global warming of fractions of a degree, or for that matter, by CO2 emissions, which really do nothing but just feed plant life on Earth and enable plants to grow more easily, especially in terrains that are usually not conducive to plant life.
Yeah. What is your, Manelli, what is your go-to in the climate change narrative? Because we all have to take a side on things like this. We're going to have a position and be able to defend it, or we're going to allow the most, you know, fluent speaker, the most gregarious personality, the most convincing, you know, rhetoric person out there to make us say, oh, okay, yeah, that sounds good. I guess I'll go with that. So what is that thing in your mind that makes you feel like I can't sign on to, and thank you for saying scam, grift, whatever you want to term you want to use, but what's the one thing that you land on when someone says, hey Manelli, you're at bowling night, or you're headed to, you know, the hunting shack, or you're hanging out with friends, and then this subject comes up. What's the thing you hang your hat on as you try to rationally argue with people why we can't get behind this climate change narrative?
That's a tough one. I would say there are many different go-to points that one could make. For me, one of the most effective in my experience is to ask people, do they know what percentage of the atmosphere is carbon dioxide? Do they know what is the most prevalent and abundant greenhouse gas in the atmosphere? And the answers to both questions, the former question is less than 0.5% of the atmosphere is carbon dioxide. And the answer to the second question is water, or H2O. That is far and away the most abundant and prevalent and dominant greenhouse gas in the atmosphere. People almost never know the answers to those two questions. And when they hear the answers to those questions, they become quite surprised. And they many times don't even know that a key part or ingredient of the alleged concerns about a runaway greenhouse effect that will make the surface of the planet uninhabitable is an assumption that water is somehow going to amplify the warming of CO2 as we put more CO2 into the atmosphere. So people typically don't know these very basic facts about greenhouse gases and climate, and at the same time, what the claims about catastrophic global warming really hinge on, or the assumptions they really hinge on. And just pointing those things out alone is oftentimes, in my experience, enough to get people to start questioning the media narrative they've been exposed to.
Yeah, that's really well said, and I like that. I think it's good to have something very simple. And I believe that one of my missions on this show is to give people some easy-to-digest nuggets, because we have busy lives. We're not talking about climate change very often. So when the conversation comes up, do I have something quick and easy that I can pull out and throw on the table and say, okay, here's kind of where it begins and ends with me. For me, it's always been the whole thing of they cannot tell you how much it's going to cost, and they cannot tell you what you're going to get for the money. That's what I've always used. I'm like, until you can answer those questions, it's a non-starter, because you might be right. But if we don't know what we're shooting for, if you can't tell me what we're going to accomplish by spending this money, then we can't start having the conversation, because there's nowhere to go with that. So I love your note about, you know, less than 0.5% of, you know, atmospheric matter, if you will, is carbon dioxide. That's a really great one to go with. I feel like this is, and I don't know if it's because President Trump is in office and drill, baby, drill is kind of the law of the land now, or what, but we're seeing people that in the past had been, you know, warriors on this. Michael Schellenberger and Bill Gates and Patrick Moore, the former Greenpeace founder. They have all backed mm-hmm. off in a very strong way recently. Are we winning this debate more than ever before, Minnelli?
Absolutely. Far more than at any time in the past. There are a number of signs or indications that the climate scam is collapsing or imploding or not really sticking with the general public. More so in the U.S., it's collapsing, I would say, than in perhaps Europe. But it seems that skepticism, generally speaking, is also increasing in Europe. And absolutely, President Trump's policies through the Department of Energy, through the EPA, through withdrawing us from the IPCC and withdrawing us from Paris Climate Accords and various other climate agreements have had a significant role in that. His speech at the UN, where he basically called this whole thing a scam, was extremely important. But also Elon Musk's purchasing of Twitter and allowing for climate realists, so-called, or climate skeptics to present their arguments and evidence without being blocked or shadow banned or banned completely
yes.
from the platform. That has had a huge, I think, influence as well, considering how many people view X, whether they do so, they say so publicly or not. And these things have all had a huge impact, absolutely. And I would also add that I think the general increase of skepticism about government agencies and what they proclaim about science, which I think was one of the lessons that a lot of people learned from the COVID lockdowns and the CDC's handling of that.
Oh, no. We were having such a good chat. Well, maybe we'll get back with him here. We're running short in this segment, but really good information there. Yeah, we're seeing, I think, a definite turn in this trend. The other question I had for him is that we know that there was work done by Heartland Institute, I think it was, not too long ago. But it actually, it's probably been almost 20 years ago now, where they went out and they measured the Anthony Watts, his team. They went out and surveyed the sites that communicated temperature back to the National Weather Service, or NOAA. And they found that all of these, okay, Mr. Derek Shawney's back with us again. Minnelli, yeah. Last thing I'd love a comment from you on, thank you for what's been a wonderful sure. conversation, but Anthony Watts and his team back in the mid-2000s, they went and surveyed all of these temperature stations that were transmitting data to National Weather Service and NOAA. And he found, like, some of them were literally on, you know, asphalt parking lots and whatever. So the data that we are shown about temperature has been almost always skewed higher. We had a thing at the Fargo Airport, which reports National Weather Service. They were running 2.5 to 3 degrees warmer, and they knew they had a problem, but it took them forever to fix it. I mean, things like this happen left and right. Have there been other studies like that that Anthony Watts and his team have done that give us some ammunition for the conversation there?
Not exactly like Anthony Watts, but one of our members of the CO2 Coalition, Tony Heller, who's a brilliant engineer and analyst, has made a number of really insightful videos where he analyzes the NOAA temperature station data, comparing raw data to the adjusted data that's released to the public, and demonstrating that the adjusted temperature station data for the contiguous 48 United States has been adjusted upwards to produce fictitious warming trends, and moreover, that more than half of the data used in these charts that are put out to the public are actually based on computer-generated climate data, because most of the stations are now defunct.
Yeah, interesting how that happens.
I recommend that everybody watches Tony Heller's videos.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I've not seen those, but got to check that out. Minnelli, thank you for the time. Great visiting with you. Hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Take care. Keep doing the good work there. Minnelli, Derek Shawney, Senior Science Advisor of the CO2 Coalition. Got a lot of texts that have come in on the redistricting in Virginia. We'll hit some of those when we come back. I came upon this album. Nowadays, they don't call it album, collection of tunes or whatever. It's basically the live concert when John Mayer back in 07 played a big venue in Los Angeles. And I'm hooked on this thing. I came across it, I don't know, a month ago, and I love it. It's an hour and a half of just unbelievable. And I'm a guitar fan. Bought a guitar not too long ago, trying to learn. I'm not good yet, but every once in a while I do something that sounds like music. But John Mayer is gifted, man, and I'm sure he's practiced a zillion hours. So John Mayer live in L.A. if you want to check that out. Boy, how much time do I have? Not enough to get to everything I want to get to here. I do want to play this. This is Scott Jennings talking on CNN, who does God's work every day on that panel, for gosh sakes, talking about the Virginia elections and his read on what happened.
Virginia had literally had the fairest maps in the nation. They had a 6-5 map, 6 Democrats, 5 Republicans. In terms of proportional representation, they had the fairest map in the nation that was drawn, by the way, by an independent commission that the voters asked for just a few years ago. Now they will have the least fair maps in the nation. And I'm not surprised that the yes vote won. They had all the money and all the lies. And sometimes in politics, when you got those two things, you can put something over the line. Even something as egregious as this, this whole thing has driven Spamberger's approval ratings down into the toilet. She lied to the people of Virginia. They had to write a ballot question that was a joke. They drew maps that were a joke. Now you're going to have huge chunks of rural Virginia represented by 5 or 6 Democrats who all live in northern Virginia within about 15 miles of each other. It's a complete joke. Everybody knows it. And there's a reason that all these national Democrats and all their money came into Virginia, because, you know, they don't really care about the people of Virginia. They just care about power.
Well, I guess we know where he stands on that one. I got a letter in the mail. This happens to me every so often. We live in the day of texts and emails, but I had someone actually sent a letter. Typed out, unsigned, so I can't tell you who sent it. But it says, Steve, you recently had Fargo School Superintendent Corey Steiner on your program. I was genuinely impressed by his decision to decline a raise. His reasoning that he could not justify accepting an increase given the challenges facing teachers in Fargo Public Schools demonstrated a level of integrity and awareness that deserves recognition. That example, however, stands in stark contrast to recent decisions within the Fargo Park District. Beginning in 2026, the executive director got a 9.75% salary increase, while deputy directors got a 4.5% increase. Meanwhile, the rest of the Park District employees were limited to a 1% cost of living adjustment, with the possibility of a merit increase capped at 2.5%. This disparity raises important questions about equity, leadership priorities, and shared sacrifice within public institutions. At a time when many public servants are being asked to do more with less, it's difficult to reconcile these decisions with the kind of moral leadership demonstrated by Mr. Steiner. I appreciate your continued coverage of local issues and would welcome any attention you can bring to this matter. Signed, a longtime listener and concerned Fargo citizen. Thank you for that. I do want to give chance for people to defend themselves, so I will be asking those questions. We'll try to get those folks on the program here coming up in the days ahead. Okay, let's hit some text messages here. Steve, the first thing you have to do is stop using the language of the left. It's not climate change, which is their euphemism. It's anthropogenic global warming, or global warming for short. By the way, your guess was phenomenal. And Adam, who signs his text messages, sends that. Thank you. Well, okay, if you listen to the show for any length of time, you know that I say the enterprise of climate change. I qualify that a lot. So hear you. I'll keep doing that because I think it's important. Climate change is a fact. Climate's always changing. We know that. Steve, you seem to talk too much. I'm sorry. Well, they tell me I got to fill 2 hours of the show. I can't tell you. You only had one call yesterday and one today. Why? Because you don't listen to people. And I'm wondering why you don't give them time when they call. Being rude is why they don't call the show. Well, thank you for that. We have calls that call into the show, and I try to take calls when I can. But the way I have styled this show is maybe a little different. You may not like it. That's okay. But I'm going to try to give you a lot of information to help you make sense of the world that you live in. And there are a lot of shows you can find where you can call and basically get in right away. And so each host will design their show a little bit differently. Mine is heavy-duty information, and we try to work in calls when we can. But we have hard breaks. We have things that we're committed to doing, people we've invited to come on the program. And so this isn't a show where you're going to show up at 9 o'clock, there's nothing really planned, and I hope you call to fill up the time. Not that that wouldn't be a bad way to do it. That's just not how I do this show. We've had calls. In fact, we had one earlier today, and I didn't. Alonda from Moorhead wanted to talk about something, and I was not able to get to it. And so I hope that she'll call back again. I try to balance it the best I can. You can decide if you don't think there's anything valuable or worth your time in the show, then you are certainly entitled to your opinion, and I'm not even going to argue with you. But then you can go find another show where you can call in, and they'll take your call, and you can say what you want to say. If I'm rude to callers, then next time I'm rude to someone, please respond then. I don't do very well with like broad generalizations about you always or you never. But if I am rude to somebody, I don't want to be, and I try very hard not to be. So you call me on it next time, okay, bud? Or sister, whoever you are. All right, well, speaking of great shows, coming up here on the flag, Scott Henn, the What's on Your Mind program coming up next. Have a great day, my friend, and keep on flying that flag.